Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Obviously, since the last time we got together, another week where a lot of things have changed since the last time we spoke, Les. And a lot of it almost immediately after our podcast wrapped up. Wasn't too long after we were done. Of course, it happened the next day that Cody apparently tore his pec in the gym, and that led to quite an interesting show at Hell in a Cell on Sunday. And so that's probably the place we should start. We'll get around to the workout and the gym stuff in a second. I know we're not going to get off that subject without discussing that a little bit, especially with your history, not only as a professional wrestling trainer and prescribing different styles of workouts for guys who are training for wrestling, but of course you were a competitive bodybuilder for a while as well. So you're well-versed in all different kinds of training. So I definitely want to get your take on the torn pec thing. But with respect to what happened at the pay-per-view this weekend, before I go off the reservation yelling at this company about letting this man into a giant cage with another 200-something plus pound man, where no matter how safe your reputation is or how safe you are, things can go sideways, can we just talk a little bit about, in spite of all of those things, and I will stand by my criticism of them letting him in the ring, how great was this match? It was awesome.
It was fucking awesome. You're right, it was. I didn't know what to expect. And yes, it was one hell of a match. And I'm sure Cody must have had some pain medication. I mean, he obviously couldn't get just blasted out of his mind and go in there and perform the way he did. But he had to have something. But still, with that something, there had to be pain. There just had to be. And he had to trust Seth implicitly. Now, if you remember going back a couple of years ago when Lance Storm could get up early enough to be on our show, that he and I talked about that, about how great a compliment it was when a guy asked to work with you when they were hurt. And he gave an example with Tommy Rogers, I believe.
That's
and
correct, yes.
I gave the example with Mark Lewin. And so that's something I told one of my constituents in the storage shed selling business too, who's a wrestling fan. You know, I had said to him about that. I said, you realize how much he's got to depend on that other guy. Well, if you saw like. Seth, boy, the pole pushing, you could see an impression that he was actually, there was an indentation in the pec, in the bad pec, right? But if you stop to think, and I can't speak for those two guys, but I know for me, in situations like that, Cody's hand is on that kendo stick. Cody's controlling the pressure, not Seth. Seth is holding it barely, and Cody is the one that's pushing down as far as he feels he can go comfortably. In situations like that, that's got to happen. But I was telling my friend Terry, who works in this business, about Vader and Stan Hansen in the eye.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I said, if you think this was tough, these guys, you know, Vader's eye was laying out on his cheek, and they still finished the damn match. So, yeah, yes, it's, but you know, when he mentioned in his, he said, what is it? Coming up in 4 weeks.
Oh, Money in the Bank.
Cody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Money in the Bank's coming up in 4 weeks. I thought, what kind of drugs are you on? Right.
But I loved, you know, in hindsight enough, now obviously we're shifting to Raw here briefly. I love that he actually referenced it. Because it really played into what they did next, whether you agree with Seth laying him out or not. And I heard Cornette disagreeing with it vociferously this week because his contention was, without Cody, you need another babyface. And after the handshake and, you know, I respect you and your father's proud of you, Seth could have been that guy. And so he was sad to see that they turned it into an angle where Cody and Seth will probably get back together when Cody comes back. But the whole thing about him just even mentioning the idea of being at Money in the Bank, I guess, you know, to Vince, the idea was it would make Seth that much more of a dastardly heel to have Cody actually even have aspirations of being back here in 4 weeks, and Seth took it away from the people who love Cody so much now.
Yeah, that's possible. Vince could have thought that way. Of course, if you obviously know what the healing process is, the turnaround time for reattaching a pectoral.
No chance.
No, not unless you stretch 4 weeks into 4 months. Then there's a chance, and he may not be ready in 4 months. It just, you know, everybody heals differently, obviously, and everybody's, you know, return is a different pace. So, but yeah, he won't be ready in 4 weeks, and I cannot imagine them allowing. Well, I can't imagine him wanting to go in there with a chance of, you know, actually injuring it a second time that quickly. So no, I think that's completely out of the question, out of the window, and everything. I know there's been talk of malpractice, and you know, or it could be a malpractice suit. Obviously it's not malpractice. Vince is not a doctor. He's a wizard. No, Chris is the wizard. That's right. I forgot. It's not Vince. Anyway, I would not have let Cody work if I were the promoter. I understand. Now that's looking at it from promoter standpoint. I'm not looking at it from Cody's, and I will in a minute. But looking at it from the promoter standpoint, there's just no way I'm letting you out there. I understand the importance, you know, in the situation, and at that peak, I think, my God, he's gotten over this strong. And let me say this right now. I think I've said this to you. He's over right now more in WWE in this period of time than he ever was in AEW. I'm sorry.
Completely agree.
You know, and it also, like I said to you off the air or an email or something, it goes to show, if Vince wants somebody over, by God, they're over.
Oh, when he decides he's going to do it, he still knows. He hasn't forgotten how to do it completely. That's proof that it's, you know, everything else is an indictment of what he thinks of everyone else, because he's pushed every right button with Cody.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, I mean, and I understand the situation, but no, as a promoter, I wouldn't have, again, too many things could go wrong. I don't care who the other worker is, as you mentioned earlier, although you would want somebody, obviously, you know, that could be trusted and work around it. As a wrestler, I don't know. Be honest, I know this conversation is going to come up, and it's already come up with a couple people, you know, throughout the week. I don't know. My first inclination is to say no, because as you know, we've been around each other long enough to know that during my in-ring career, I realized that this is the only body God's going to give me, and it's the tool that I work with, and I've got to take care of it. So no, there were times that I wouldn't do something that probably somebody else would. And so, I mean, that would have been my first, and no, I'm not working. But I understand this buildup to this point. It almost, you know, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. It put me in his shoes right now, and I'm hard-pressed to say I would not have gone out there. But under normal circumstances, if this is just a normal week in my wrestling schedule, and something like that happened, I'm done until the doctor gets done with me. And so he sure, well, he took a hell of a chance. It was a gutsy thing to do. There's no two ways about that. And you know what? Crazy thing is, it probably got him over more so than if he hadn't tore the pec.
Oh, completely. I mean, and you know,
don't you think?
For sure. You watch him take off that ring jacket, and the way he knew he was going to get a reaction for it, because he took longer than he ever has to get the ring jacket off, you know, pacing around the ring, waiting for the introductions to be complete to take the jacket off. The way Seth took off his polka dot tank top with a flourish, because you knew it was coming on the other side. Everything right. They did to get the absolute most out of what you were going to see when that jacket came off was pitch perfect. It was uncomfortable to watch for at least the first few minutes. You could hear it audibly in the crowd, and I was uneasy watching, thinking, what is this guy going to put himself through in this match? But at the end of the day, I have to admit that even though I agree with you, and there's no chance in hell I would have put him out there as my biggest star and taking any kind of additional risk, even if, as a doctor might say, well, you can't tear it any more than it's already torn. You know what? We may just find out because something else could happen. But
yeah,
the way they put everything together, it was an example, even though this match was filled with plunder, of getting the absolute most out of every single thing they did, at least for me, from my viewpoint. And the other part of it for me with Cody and Seth and the way they put this thing together is just how memorable it is for a variety of reasons, but obviously because of the injury. You know, the Cell match has meant less and less because obviously they've gone away from Blood and it's much more of a PG company. And this match is not the, you know, you don't look at it even in storyline as the potential career ender that you used to look at it like years in years past. And so for me at the end of the show, I was struck by how much I was into this match and maybe, you know, really bought into the violence of the match, even though it was much like the other matches in recent years, you know, decidedly less bloody or less crazy than previous Hell in a Cell matches. But it might be, for me at least, I can't think of another one. Maybe someone will jump in the comments on the message board and remind me of one. I'm not sure there's been as dramatic a Cell match and one that people have been into as much since Triple H and The Undertaker with Shawn Michaels as the referee at WrestleMania years ago.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it hit all the right buttons for the crowd. And yes, as Cody is, you know, made him a stronger baby face. He, you know, the proud, you know, I'm going out here to, you know, to do my thing because this is what I do and this is an important match and the whole thing. Yes. Yes. And like I said, he's over stronger now than he ever was in AEW. And the only thing with Seth, I thought it wasn't a bad touch for Seth coming back out and putting the boots to him. What I thought was wrong was producers and referees coming out, and when Seth waved the sledgehammer at them, they just all stood back. I thought, wait a minute, what are you out there? Why you should have stayed back behind the curtain?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're still multiple former wrestlers who are not, you know, string beans at this point. You can still get out there and jump on the guy.
Yeah, and put a stop to it. And that's what should have happened to me, honestly. Instead of them, you know, showing their fear of Seth and the sledgehammer is, yes, we got you in numbers and you're creating a worse. And I think that visually would have come across to the viewing audience that, wow, this is a serious injury. They're so afraid he's going to make it worse. But my downside of that whole thing is, how do you maintain that fire for the next 4 or 5 months?
Well, that was one of my next points. There's two things I want to ask you about. A, how do you maintain that fire for the next 4 or 5 months? Because we know Vince's history. You know, someone can go away on something on such a high note like this and be still top of mind to Vince. But as the weeks and months wear on, you know, he just sort of gravitates towards other things at times, and people will come back and he'll get a big, you know, he'll get a nice presentation on the way back. I have no doubt of that. But I should say when he shows up, because I think where we're going is what will they do in the meantime to keep him top of mind on television? And that'll go, I imagine, go a long way towards whether or not he stays at the top of Vince's mind. If it's Vince in the next set of meetings saying, you know, we got to follow him in through rehab, we got to make sure we're at the gym with him, we've got to have a camera there, we got to do this and that, then you know that Vince is really all in on this and will continue to be so. If we don't really see or hear Cody until like a week or two or the week he shows up, then I'm kind of concerned about what might happen between now and then in terms of, I don't know that necessarily anyone will surpass Cody in terms of name value or star value while he's away necessarily. But what is Vince's opinion? Will he have already moved on to the next new toy?
Yeah, that's Vince's attention span sometimes isn't very long.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I know what you're saying. To me, you're right about, to me, to maintain any semblance of tie-in from what of Seth's attack Monday night to say 4 or 5 months down the road is, you're right. With Cody, you're at the hospital. You're at the train. He's getting him back in shape. Then I don't want Seth to lean, you know, every week is not talking about Cody. I mean, he can go on. He's gone, you know, whatever, and be on with it. But I think if I were doing it, is when Cody is actually ready, I don't want the people to know. And Seth, I would have Cody do the same damn thing to Seth 4 months down the road that Seth did this past Monday night.
Okay.
Not go out and ask for a handshake. But Seth is leaving the ring after some interview or a promo or a match. And out of nowhere, Cody just lays his ass out, gets juice on him, and said, now, let's pick it up where we left it off.
What do you think about, like you said, the camera staying with him through the rehab process? But what if at some point he says in maybe the last or next to last vignette with him somewhere, I'm almost ready, but I'm not going to tell you when because you're not going to see me coming.
That would be okay too. You know, you just the my thing with if you tease it too much, Vic,
yes,
then they know it's coming for sure.
They know it's coming for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And WWE has a history of doing exactly that too often. Is, hey, we don't want you to miss this angle, so we're going to tell you it's going to happen 3 weeks before it happens, right?
Right. Right.
I mean, you've seen it. You see it coming, and that's the only thing. There's a fine line there. That's the point, I think.
The other note I sent you via email this week, and I'm just going to read it off in terms of the questions I had for you regarding Cody. Was Vince unknowingly at fault for this injury? And I in no way am trying to imply that Vince drives Cody too hard at the gym or anything like that, or that he had any knowledge of it. You know, what I mean is Vince's history. Everybody knows what it is. He likes bigger guys. It's part of his presentation, always has been. This territory, when it was run by his father as a territory, was known as the land of the giants during that era. So
right.
There is an unspoken at this point. He doesn't even have to tell you. You know what he likes, especially if you're Cody, second generation. He's been around. He knows what the deal is. And I mentioned this to you, and I asked you to take a look at this. I saw a picture before I even watched the match of Cody taking his ring jacket off. And my immediate first thought was, man, I don't recall seeing him looking that thick in the chest and shoulders at any point in AEW, or even a couple of weeks ago. Maybe I've just been missing it. But man, he looks bigger than I remember. And so it makes sense to me, when I see the torn pec, I'm like, well, he is much bigger. He's clearly lifting heavier. And when I say is Vince unknowingly at fault, it's that every talent in that locker room knows the deal. Did Cody, who was already getting the push of his life and was making more money probably than he has any idea what to do with, but really for him, getting the run that he's always wanted and thinks that he deserves because he's put in the work for it, and he has, is on this thing. And even through all this and, the conversations he had, the heart-to-hearts with Vince prior to signing where they squared everything and Vince is clearly behind him, even amidst all that, did Cody look at Vince and say, you know what, I just got to make sure, and I know what he likes. So now he's in the gym harder than he ever had before while undergoing the house show schedule, which isn't what it used to be. But let's be honest, he also just came off of 3 years of working once a week. And so now he's right. Doing house show loops full time, and he's training harder than ever, maybe because he knows what Vince likes. And even though he's got a great look already, he unconsciously or maybe consciously figures for Vince he has to get a little bit bigger, and this is why he ends up tearing the pec.
That's very, very possible, and I won't disagree. But with Cody, I'll be honest with you, was not paying attention to his physical presence in terms of bigger, smaller, or anything like that. And you made mention of that to me, and I went back and looked, and yes, he's thicker through the chest and shoulders than he was previously. I have got to go along with Lance Storm, and he said he'd been lifting 40 years and had never torn anything. I'm not even gonna tell you how many years I've been picking up weights, but I haven't either. And yes, please understand what we're talking about. If you're doing something to enhance your size, and listen, let me say this, I Cody had been going to a buffet every day and eating himself sick, because you can put on weight that way, believe me. But if you're doing something to help enhance your size, it does it make the muscle bigger? Yes. It also weakens the tie-ins, the tendon where it ties to the bone. Hence quadricep tears, bicep tears, pec tears, tricep tears, because it can't strengthen the tendon. You know, so yes, that is a very, very big possibility. And I could see, if Cody is getting the biggest push of his life, going to make the most money he's ever made, that he's on fire to be the best he can ever be. So, you know, all the pins are set up to fall in that direction. Yes. And again, I'm not making any assumptions or, you know, but I know that does happen a lot, the tearing muscle, you know, if you're doing something to help enhance him. So I don't know for sure, but he did look a bit thicker. And I'm, listen, you know, that's something I've never done, Vic. When I was competing, I was drug free, which is, I'm not bragging about it. It's just that was, you know, I didn't look my nose at the guys that used anabolics. I just didn't use them. I didn't see the value because I wasn't trying to be a pro bodybuilder anyway. But yeah, it's common. And, you know, with adults, I always look at it as that's their call, you know. And I do know professionals that have used them sparingly and used them the way they were meant to be used, basically, and have achieved quite a bit of success and without, you know, ripping their cells apart too. So, but it made for a conversation coming out of there. And I think Monday night was up more than it normally would have been, probably off of pay-per-view too.
Well, it definitely was up. And Dave has some notes, by the way, if you have not checked out the latest edition of The Observer, it's up on the front page at F4WOnline.com. And in it, you will see that there's apparently some evidence that not only was Raw up a little bit, but perhaps Cody being in this cell match, and obviously it takes two to tango, Seth as well, but Cody being the fresh, new, hot talent on the roster may have actually been responsible for a little business being done in Chicago more than they were getting or expecting once that match was announced, Cody and Seth in the cell. So perhaps Cody is actually starting to translate into numbers moving in addition to Vince and the full machine getting behind him, which obviously makes it even more bittersweet with what happened this week, but also a really interesting sign that perhaps some people were enticed, if not necessarily to sell the place out, because it was close to a sellout, but the degree to which the secondary market prices went up at the time that match was announced indicates that there was demand. When people couldn't find tickets the traditional ways, they went elsewhere to try and get into the building and see that particular match. So, yeah. There are a few markers here that indicate Cody's making a difference.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You know, along the same lines, and something, a conversation came up in the middle of the week with a friend of mine, and I wanted to mention it on here, too. He was, Roman's not going to be working all the, you know, and he's taking time. I said, you know, for me, I think it's a plus, not a minus. And he said, why do you say that? I said, I don't want the champion defending the title every week. Yeah. I don't need to see the champion every week. It weakens we've already determined, and Dave will go along with this, and Brian, and I think Lance and, you know, Antonio Thomas, the other guys who have been in the ring, like myself on here, seeing the championship being defended once a week takes so much away from the champion and the championship, and then changing hands too quickly does the same thing. So, I don't see a problem with it. So Roman's going to be more important when he comes, the times he's there, because you're not seeing him. Realize that goes all that, mentality goes all the way back even before me, believe it or not, over 60 years ago, because one of the first things I heard is you don't need to go out there. The people need to think you're special. If you're out there sitting in the audience, talking to everybody, you know, hugging all the grandmas and kissing all the babies, then you're one of them. You're not special anymore. Stay in the dressing room until it's time to wrestle. Go out. And of course, you know, back then, kids or adults, for that matter, could come up to ringside and the baby faces would sign, you know, autographs while they were in the ring waiting for the match, you know, for their opponent to come out and that sort of thing. So that was something that goes way back, you know, about don't, you know, if you're with me every day, then you and I are buddies and you're like my next door neighbor. So, yeah, I think Roman taking time off is not a big deal. And as the champion, when he comes back and defends the belt, it's going to mean more, I believe.
An interesting change in philosophy, too, perhaps forced on him by the fact that he realizes his biggest star wants to do something different. And at the moment, who am I to argue with the man in terms of Vince and Roman? But, you know, when the brand split first started, what, a decade and a half ago, Vince was very down on the unified champion thing, even when the champion was showing up on both shows every week, because he was upset that house shows would not get title matches in equal measure, that there wasn't a champion on both shows, thinking that it would affect houses. And it just shows just how much the business has changed, because Vince is still running these house shows every weekend, but it's no longer apparently a problem if there's not a championship match.
You know, there's some, you know, some of the old stuff from back in my time, lacing them up. If I were promoting today at any level, some of those things I would bring, you know, and that would be one of them. I don't want my champion defending his title every week, especially not the way they do it now. Is like, oh, hey, Vic, I don't like your tights. Well, then, Les, what are you going to do about it? I'm going to challenge you for the belt. Okay, we're on. It's like a pickup basketball game on a schoolyard, for Christ's sake. You know, at least they let Adam Pearce, you know, get involved in some of that. But when they're and AEW the same, it's, you know, I'm sure every other company is probably, oh, okay, I'll wrestle you. No, you won't. Yes, you will. That sort of thing is nonsensical, I think. But I would bring back, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, most of the promotions is like the champion is expected to defend his title every 30 days. And, you know, he, and of course he has to sign. And so it makes it more special. It makes it more special. And if you realize how Harley or Flair or Lou or Pat O'Connor or Rogers or any of these guys drew in the territory days, one of the major reasons, no matter who it was, is the world champion only came through your territory maybe once or twice a year. So it had to be special. And by you having your champion there every day, every minute, every hour, he's one of the boys. So he's not as special any longer. So I like it. I think it's a good idea.
We're just a couple of minutes away from getting into a very busy week for AEW with lots of happenings and announcements and such. But, you know, it's unusual that we have a really newsworthy Raw in addition to Cody being put out for a while by Seth. We had Finn Balor turning on Edge along with Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley now. Edge obviously on the good guy side, at least for the foreseeable future moving forward, if he's not in fact also taking time off. Then you got Riddle announcing his intention to challenge Roman for the title, as you'll see in this week's edition of The Observer. That which was originally discussed as being for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view is apparently now going to happen on television at some point, since Roman is not, as we just got finished talking about, scheduled anymore for Money in the Bank. And then, even though it wasn't a big deal and it was part of an angle, and I get all of that, Dana Brooke pinning Becky Lynch. Like, there's just no angle you can pitch me where I want to approve of that.
No, me either. Me either. I don't see the value in that. Well, we didn't say that Vince has cleaned his act up completely.
No, far from it, as a matter of fact.
No. Well, you know, and what I'm hearing too about the Edge thing is that they want to do some afterlife nonsensical stuff with Priest and Rhea, and I guess you're going to do it with Finn now too. And Edge thought it was not a good idea, and he was not comfortable being a part of it. So they're making a change. My hat is off to Edge for doing that. and saying,
the part about that I found really interesting, though, is that Edge is one of those guys that we've seen since his maybe the second title reign. You know, when he had the Money in the Bank briefcase and cashed it on a very memorable SmackDown against The Undertaker years ago. Really, since from that point forward, you know, he's someone who does have Vince's ear in a major way.
Right.
You know, he can make his point. He can get his point across to Vince. And, you know, it would not be unusual for Vince to go with Edge's suggestion. And so this whole supernatural, which will probably end up being hokey BS, I was taken more by the idea that Edge, first of all, as you said, stepped up and wanted to prevent it, wasn't in on it or happy with it. And instead, he clearly got overruled by the boss. And if you don't like it, well, then you can leave the group because I'm going to do what I want to do. So obviously Vince is very behind whatever it is they're going to do. I question how good it's going to be, but I guess we'll all find out.
I question how good it's going to be too. Plus, what is it going to do to the three people participating?
Yes.
Does it make them any, Bliss is back. She's lukewarm, I think. Don't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
that stuff didn't work for her.
She's not over. She's not dead either.
Right.
But she's just there, right? After all this other stuff, where did it get her? The middle of the card. So I think, you know, Priest was, as a babyface, he talks good. I thought he was doing well. I thought, damn, I'm happy for him. And I mean, I'm happy for him being there and making a living. I don't know how Ripley will be with that. I don't know. But Finn, I think, is such a great talent, too. And to put these people into that hokey situation, I'm saying hokey like you, because I figure how can it be anything else if it's supernatural? So I don't see the value in it. And although I think I said last week, I just the whole thing with it, that group just didn't fall into place for me. I just didn't see it working. Not for any particular reason. It just didn't fit for me.
Well, perhaps Vince agreed with you. I'm not sure his idea is any better. But
well, I called him and I said, Vince, listen up.
Well,
no, I don't. I think his idea is probably a lot worse than what I thought was not clicking. But anyway.
So there's the stuff that came out of this week with AEW. Obviously, they got some good news in that the initial estimates for Double or Nothing are about 150 to 155,000, which is up from last year's show. But there's also a lot of other interesting stuff. There's the, is this a work or isn't it? How much does the parent company know here, the television partner, about what's going on? Does anybody actually really know what's going on with Warner ordering MJF off of all the AEW spots? Are they in on it? Are they not? Has this thing been... Now, this is just me talking now, okay? I just want to make sure I make that clear. I'm not telling you anything I've seen in other places or on our site that's been reported. I am now of the opinion... I shouldn't say that. I'm not exactly of the opinion. But I'm starting to wonder whether or not this thing... This blow-up between MJF and Tony has been a work for a lot longer than any of us have really been talking about. Going back to MJF's very first criticism of his deal and his money. Only because, you know, when you start working or blurring these lines, then I start looking back and thinking, well, you know, how long has this been in the works? Especially if they're doing the Pillman thing. And how long did Eric and Brian know while nobody else did? And how long did Brian know stuff that Eric never knew? Now I'm thinking about interviews from months before this became a major issue, where MJF was talking about going to the WWE and definitely going to have to get more money soon. You know, maybe this is not a month or 6 weeks in the making. It might be more like 3 or 4 months if you go back in time the first times MJF was giving interviews talking about his money situation that Tony Khan never actually commented on until very recently. But regardless, you know, everything that's going on with that, then you get into this week's edition of Dynamite. And we've been talking for a number of weeks now how Dynamite television itself has not been all that strong in the last, I don't know, 6-8 weeks. But this might have been, at least for me, Les, the worst show we've seen in a while.
It sure wasn't the best. I agree with you. Well, first of all, to replace your injured champion who needs surgery or has already had it now that we're speaking. It was the first thing, battle royal. That's, you realize you people in this generation have taken something that was used as an attraction, maybe in a major town once or twice a year, simply because it was different. In spot shows, it was a way to, you know, to get a lot of excitement for people who you're not going to see again for another year. But to replace a champion, and that's become a current thing because it's a throw for 20. So 50 guys, 20 guys, 30 guys, whatever it happens to be in there, and we'll pull, you know. Nobody gets hurt, nobody gets over either. It was a cluster. It was not a great match. I mean, it was there. And I'll say here what I told you before we started recording. My friend Jim that comes and watches with me some was there Wednesday night. And about halfway through this thing, I happened to look over at him. And he was reading a magazine. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Trying to find something to entertain me." Mm. That's sure not.
Yeah.
And that was his comment. And I thought, well, it's not entertaining me either, but I'm kind of stuck with it here too. But yeah, it wasn't good. We get one guy out of here, and then he's going to wrestle Mox, and then Mox is going to meet a mystery opponent. Why? Why a mystery opponent for it? I mean, you're making too much out of something that's already important. I would have taken my three former world champions that are healthy, and I would have added to them either three more or five more people and had a short tournament. Because I knew, and I think you knew, and of course, once we saw it happening, we all knew that three-fourths of the guys in this battle royal had no business being contending for any title, never mind a world's champion. Well, so, no, go ahead.
That took a poor concept in the battle royal, as you pointed out, something that was used very sparingly back in the day, and just made it worse because you're out there watching these guys come out every couple of minutes thinking to yourself, there isn't anyone here I believe has a chance in hell against Moxley. And I love Kyle O'Reilly. You know that. And I know you love him too. But based on the way he's been presented, did you think it was going to be Kyle O'Reilly versus somebody for the interim championship? No, not a chance. And to your point about the other, the mystery opponent, I understand they're trying to help their partner in, you know, adding a match that supposedly would have some marquee value for them at their upcoming show. To make it, you know, I guess, for lack of a better term, even. We're both trying to figure out exactly who's going to do this. But why would you need an extra match? It's Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like, the first ballot Hall of Famer was the guy who was already penciled into the slot. Why would you do that? Why would you remove that? Well, there's no reason to say Tanahashi versus Goto, which they'll have here in a few days, which will be a terrific match, but there's no one in Japan who's going to believe that Goto has a chance in hell of winning that match either. So why are we wasting time? Let's just have the winner versus Tanahashi and move on.
Well, maybe you and I are just lost in the Booker of the Year's got it all down pat. I'm not real sure.
I guess so, but there's no way I'd want to take Hiroshi Tanahashi's name off the board. What I would have wanted to do this week in the immediate thing after the Battle Royal winner is a package on Tanahashi.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, I would have loved that. And they didn't make a big deal out of Ospreay either, did they?
Not nearly as much as they could have or should have.
Well, I'm thinking instead just a damn run-in. Why not a package on this guy? Do you realize I know who he is? You know who he is. If you watch New Japan, everybody who's watched New Japan knows who the hell he is. How about these people who just watch AEW or just watch WWE and don't read, you know, the websites or the sheets or whatever? They don't. And so that, and, you know, and that is a mistake made across the board in this industry in recent years, especially, and I'm not saying it hasn't happened off and on over the years period, but, is just consider, well, with social media, everybody knows who this guy is. No, they don't. You can't assume that. You know, you can, but I think it's a mistake to assume that. You make something big, then it's going to, you know, it's going to come across as big. And, that's, You know, that's as it should be. You realize that's an old adage that goes way back to the business, too. You know, there were times as a commentator, you know, people would say, you know, you put this guy over enough. Even the people didn't believe in him at first. They're believing him now because you've talked about it enough. At some point, they're going to buy in or just, you know, tune you out. So, yeah, but with him, why would you not announce? And like I say, with Ospreay, well, like my friend Jim, I said, I've only seen Ospreay a few times and on the New Japan shows, you know. So I've never seen him up close in person. Is that him? I said, yeah, I think so. What do you mean you think so? Well, that's what I just said, Jim. I think so. But yes, I thought, and of course, as my friend Jim says, the company that brings you afterbirth after afterbirth. That's, you know, and that's their trademark, and it's a sad trademark. But yes, I would have given him a lot more ink, a lot more video. If you're going to interview somebody, how about talking to this guy, right? Who is he? Where has he been? Where, all over the world? Oh, what's the name of their group? The Australian what?
The tag team is Aussie Open.
Aussie Open, yeah. Well, that says it all, doesn't it? That tells you who everybody there is. Do you know who the other two guys are?
Oh, my goodness. Besides Aussie?
No, you don't.
No.
I don't either. How's that?
Well, I would imagine the majority of the audience didn't, and that's the bigger point, right?
And yes, exactly. And there's a reason that, you know, that you do a video package on these guys or something, for Christ's sake, to get them over. But yeah, we're talking about how this show may have hit I won't say the bottom, they go a lot farther, but maybe the lowest I've seen or the least exciting, or I don't know how to put it, that we've seen in some time. And I think one of the major problems here is 20 security guards.
Oh, my God. I mean, this was just, finally Wardlow gets his chance to speak. And first he says, I'm not in the battle royal because CM Punk is the champion to me and I want to face him. Well, that's all well and good. How about winning the battle royal, beating Moxley, then beating Tanahashi or whoever it's going to be at the pay-per-view, and guarantee that you're going to be there and get the first opportunity when he gets back? What do you mean? You don't want to be in the battle royal or the tournament. There's only one way to guarantee that you're the first guy up. That's by winning the interim championship, you dope. I mean, who told him to say that? That was just, ugh. Anyway, never mind the Scorpio Sky stuff. For the TNT title, which I imagine is where they're actually going to be going after this god-awful thing with the 20-on-1. But the whole, everything was going so well and so right, and now they got too cute for their own good, and they've just completely sabotaged this thing.
Well, maybe they start adding two men. Next week he beats 22, then 24. He's doing what Goldberg did, only upping the number, and at some point he can't beat 30 guys or something. How's that? I'm not that childish. God knows who thought this up was that. It's, yeah, it was just bad. It was bad, 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 and bad. And yes, Wardlow looks good. You got him to a good point, but you're not doing anything with him. You're not doing anything with him. My God. And now Marina, is that the pronunciation?
Yes, Marina Shafir.
Marina Shafir. I feel so sorry for you, Marina Shafir. I look down and think, God, why don't they like you in AEW? And I say that because this is the second time I have seen her on. Now, she may have been on TV 30 other times. I don't know. This is the second time I've seen her on TV. She was with Thunder Rosa. And she was lost in that ring. She had to wait for Thunder Rosa to get her to the next move. When she tries to sell, she wanders around like she's drunk. She doesn't have she's not ready for this. Damn it. And I felt bad for her. I felt really bad for her. You're embarrassing her. And if you're not smart enough to see it, I don't know who the hell is. She's not ready to be out there. If she's going to be good at all, putting her out on major television is not going to get it done. Get her book. If you deal with your guys, you got guys there who go out and work decent indie shows, and maybe some work indie shows that aren't worth the damn. I don't know, but there are some good indie shows that you can send her and one of your, and get her some ring time in front of crowds that aren't on national television. And that's my biggest problem. And she's not ready for it. And that's your biggest problem, Tony, not mine. But it's an embarrassment to her, and she needs to be treated better than that, I think, or anybody needs to be treated better than that, just to put her out there and embarrass her. That I see no value in that whatsoever. None. I want to go back up to the following, the last Friday, when Athena, what was the other, what's the girl's name she worked with?
Was it Kira Hogan?
Yeah. That time, how much, can I get $5 every time I bring up the word timing?
Yes.
Jesus, that match fell apart. Timing. And it was on Hogan. It was, you know, and I thought Athena would carry this, but it's just, damn, it hurt the match badly. Somebody not being in place at the right time. And I just don't even understand that. Except that when you're planning everything move for move in the back, then that's not part of the deal. If you have to improvise, then you better be sure about your timing. And let me say, what I'm saying here is, you know, you're setting up a spot. The person that's taking the bump needs to be paying attention to the person giving the bump and vice versa. Not looking at each other directly, directing traffic, like a dive through the ropes where you stand and can't wait to catch your opponent who you hate, but you don't want to see him get hurt. And so, yeah, so it's just, you got to either pick up the pace if the other person is behind on setting this up, or you've got to slow down if they're behind, and if they're ahead, then you got to pick it up. But somebody needs to do something, and it's just a shame. And I say it, I mean, I'm not holding anybody in particular fault, but it's just somebody needs to be teaching it. And I don't know who's working Maria. I don't know how long she's been training. She obviously is good. Again, I'm going to say it. She's obviously a damn good athlete if she fought MMA. I don't care if she got beat every time to get in there, to be ready to go in there. She had to be a damn good athlete. But she is not a damn good professional wrestler. She's not even ready to be out there. And, you know, get her some matches with some decent independents and work with some women and get her some more training before you put her out there again. Please don't embarrass her again. I don't know the lady, but I feel bad for her. I really do.
Last item of business on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, the new AEW All Atlantic Championship. Where to begin, Les? Well, I'll tell you where, for me at least, because I'm just...
I was about to start there. I was going to give you a geography lesson.
Yes. Obviously, no geography majors in AEW, because if you're calling it the All Atlantic title, you probably shouldn't have the Japanese flag on it since, you know, they're in the Pacific. I guess this is now supposed to be the Intercontinental Championship. And that's when, you know, obviously that's the thing everyone's comparing it to, right? But here's my thing.
Yeah.
I've been watching this show since you came on the air. I was wrong. And apparently, and I'm going to bring him up again, Jim Cornette was apparently right about this. Because from minute one of the TNT Championship, he's been referring to it as the TV title. And I thought to myself, well, there's only two men's singles titles in this company. To me, the TNT title is the Intercontinental Championship. Wrong. Cornette was, in fact, correct. It is the TV title in every sense of the word. Because this is apparently going to be the one that's right underneath the World Heavyweight Championship. But like I said, you know, this TNT title could have filled that role just fine. Why are we adding yet another championship, especially when there's rumors of the Trios titles and all sorts of other stuff potentially in play in AEW? One of the attractions at the beginning of the company was one championship in each division, and we're moving on. And now we've got all these championships, a new one, never mind the Ring of Honor titles, and, you know, when it suits you, the AAA championships and the New Japan championships.
I can't keep track of. I mean, I think every company probably has more championships than they need, and AEW must be the champion of those people having too many championships that they don't need.
Well, they need the most belts because they have the biggest roster, right?
Yeah, Ring of Honor tag champions, Ring of Honor heavyweight champion,
television champion.
Yes, TNT champion, the world champion. What's Muro still got a title? No, he didn't.
No. He was the TNT champion, and he's in this All-Atlantic title tournament. We'll see his match, I think, next week or sometime soon.
Yeah, but, yeah, too many belts. And again, I don't know if we should quit talking about it or just keep mentioning it because it frustrates us. You do too much, too often, too quick, too fast, with not enough not enough build up for each thing. And it's confusing, and it will continue to be so, I think. So I don't know.
And by the way, if I'm Wardlow, why am I not throwing chairs in the back after I just got finished talking about the TNT championship? You son of a bitch, why didn't you put me in this tournament? You know, if there's another championship I can go after, why did you not put me in this field?
Yes. You know, I'm ready to get back to Dragon working with O'Reilly or Adam Cage or Page or somebody they can go with. I don't care who. I just see some decent wrestling. That would really make it great, I think. I do. But yeah, this past Wednesday was not one of their best efforts. And I don't think you and I are the only two that look at it that way, do we?
No, I'm pretty sure it was the majority opinion this week was that this show was not all that great and that the All-Atlantic Championship, at least at this point, appears to be completely unnecessary. Obviously, we have no choice but to watch this play out, so we'll see how it works. Certainly, the field is interesting in that Miro's there. You had Pac get a win this week, and Malakai Black is in the tournament, so there's some guys that we have seen at some time and wanted to see more of who are going to be in this. So there could be some potentially good matchups in the tournament. And just by virtue of the fact that of the field, you would think that this is the title that would be right underneath the AEW championship. But, you know, time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah. And then again, we may add a couple more. We forgot to mention the FTW championship.
Oh, that's right. That's that non-sanctioned, but feel free to bring it onto our television every week.
Sure. As well as the Impact titles and the which Mexican federation?
AAA. AAA.
Yes. So hey, if we have a championship night, we will have to take speed to stay awake to watch it all. Right?
Battle of the Belts could be a 13-match show.
Yes, it could. And we're pointing out points that we feel here are. Should be changed and are either overdone or not done enough. But yeah, it's and again, you know, my buddy Brock Guffin says, you know, I watch this to no conclusion because there isn't one. And he said, what am I watching? And I said, wrestling. He said, very little, but yes, that's where I draw the conclusion. But we shall survive, I suppose.
Well, the bright side.
And the NWA is.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, go ahead. The NWA show this
NWA
weekend.
NWA is doing 2 days in Knoxville. Yeah, over the weekend they're running a house show and doing a pay-per-view.
So
I haven't, to be honest with you, I have not seen any local advertising. Like, when we did the Pillman shows, we bought time on Raw, on whatever it was, whether WCW was at the time, we bought time on these shows to plug it locally. They're in here to do a paper. Now, I hope they draw. I don't know if they will or not, but I haven't seen any real local advertisement on local television, you know, like spots for, on wrestling shows rolled in or anything. So I've seen some stuff on Facebook, but other than that, I don't know. And I'm guessing they're not planning on honoring the history of NWA wrestling in Knoxville in any way, shape, or form, because as far as I know, none of us have been invited to be there. So,
and as luck would have it, there's a number of you in the area.
Yes, there sure are. There are a number of us in the area, but it's okay. Hey, they're the future. Just ask them.
If you can find them. They're not advertising. How do I know where to find them?
Well, they're at I don't know if the both shows are in the same place. And I'll tell you the truth, you know, I'm not totally indoctrinated to the logistics of the community I'm living in currently, because I don't get out and you know, do the discovery thing. But I'm under the impression there are two convention centers in the city, and I don't know which. I know they're going to be in one of them. One is downtown, and the other one is on the outskirts, and I'm not sure which one, because I haven't seen anything other than just the name of this, you know, and not like it's on this street or that street. Again, the advertise now on their TV, they may be pounding the hell out of this. I don't know, because I haven't seen their TV, but they are in Knoxville this weekend.
Wow. Not even any old fashioned, since it's the NWA, posters in the gas station or the print shop or the Piggly Wiggly.
I try not to get near gas stations myself.
You are wise to do so right
they're
now.
They're depleting my savings at a rapid rate.
Well, we're going to start winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Now is about the time. Oh, you haven't put up any flyers for your DVDs in the Piggly Wiggly, have you, by the way?
No.
You should get Joe Dombrowski to send you some. Start posting them everywhere.
By God, you're right. We should do that. Joe, Joe doesn't listen to us. He doesn't own a subscription to the Observer website. That's why.
Joe's too busy globetrotting, calling wrestling companies from all over the world now.
By God, he is. I know. I said, I remember you when you were a nice young man. he's down in Mexico. He's all over the United States. Bless it. I'm happy for him. He's a good guy. He does good work, by the way, if you've never heard Joe do a broadcast. He's very good. He gets your product over and doesn't pay a lot of attention to getting himself over. So he's a good guy. Check him out if you get the chance.
And where can we check you out, brother?
Well, if you'd like to book me for a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to get all the information out to you. And if you're looking in the market to buy a T-shirt, why not a Briscoe Booster T-shirt, which was the first ever pro wrestling T-shirt on the market, put out in 1972 by Jack, Jerry, and myself. And you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees. Also there, I'm a Les Thatcher guy. If you happen to be, you can pick one of those up as well. Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content, two DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras. Speaking of Joe Dombrowski, he and I do the voiceover. Joe covers the play-by-play for the most part, and I, you know, do behind-the-scenes stories and talking about the performers and so forth. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And, of course, the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20th anniversary, four DVD set, 15 hours of content. All four of those shows from 98, 99, 2000, and 2001. Matches, interviews, auction footage, of awards, extras, all kinds of extras. And Joe and I do the voiceover on these. And Brian Jr. and I do a short interview on the beginning of this whole thing. You can get that at PillmanShows.com or at the two addresses that I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And on Saturday, July the 9th, excuse me, I'm going to be in Sevierville, Tennessee at the Sevierville Civic Center for Heroes and Legends 17. It's a fan fest. There'll be a one-day event, and it runs from 1 p.m. till 6, you know, with the booths and all that sort of thing. And then there is going to be a show that night. I'm going to be there for the Developmentally Speaking podcast. I'll be in their booth from 1 p.m. to 6. Sign autographs, talk wrestling, post your pictures, do song and dance if you pay enough. But no. That's a joke. Anyway, and then, of course, if you're out and around, you can catch me here 5 days a week at Mountain Barn Builders in Rocky Top, Tennessee. It's my son's company, but I'm up here hanging out from around 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we're at 313 North Main Street in Rocky Top, Tennessee, off of exit 128. And if you're in the neighborhood, stop by and see me or give me a call at 865-207-8457. We can put you in a nice storage unit, a carport, playhouses, chicken coops, dog kennels. We can't build wrestling rings or wrestling buildings. It was the only thing. But anyway, stop by if you're in the neighborhood. That about covers it for me today, Vic.
All right, brother. So we're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly and commiserate once again next week. So for the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of this particular weekend to spend it with us. And we're looking forward to getting back with you next week.